Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with the Professor, and we're pleased to be joined by Steve Palazzaro from Pro Football Focus. And, you know, interesting because the topic today is going to be football analytics, how it's growing, where it's heading, what it does, and where the future is going to be in it. And, of course, Steve works, you know, right now for a site that really does a lot of great stuff. I mean, particularly now, different type of services that people can buy. But the big thing, Steve, is that, you know, in Pro Football Focus, as with analytics, you educate both the fans and the NFL as to what's going on and then what eventually can happen.
Yeah, I like to call it finding the truth in every play. You know, we grade and analyze every single player on every play, and whether it's saying how well he did his job and trying to put a number to that, or just defining exactly what he did, where did he line up, what was his role. And you kind of take all that information and roll it together, and you get so much that you could pull out of it. How well does this guy perform in a particular role? What happens when you change his role? What happens when he plays in coverage versus rushing the passer? And just trying to put numbers to that. And like you said, that's the type of information that, you know, fans can use and that 29 NFL teams are using to help fuel their game plans on a weekly basis.
So now how many different eyeballs are looking at it, and how did they go about trying to get the information? Because obviously you can replay and replay and replay, but it's a matter of like now you've got to watch 22 different players and see what they do on every given play.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different processes. So our grading will have one person go through initially, and then another person will go through and check his work. And, you know, sometimes there's a question about, hey, what was this coverage? What was this guy's responsibility here? Any questions will go to a third person to check. And a lot of times we'll go to a fourth person, to check that guy's work. And that's just on the grading side of it. We have a team that just goes through and they simply chart where did everybody line up on the field and what was their basic role. We have people who go through and chart every single route that every receiver ran. We have a new process this year that's charting every single player from a blocking standpoint. You know, did the left guard block Aaron Donald, and how did he try to block him, and where did he try to move him? So there's probably 10 to 15, sometimes 20 sets of eyeballs on any given play with all of our various processes and then the reviews that go with each of those processes. So there's a lot of time, probably about 50 man hours of work that go into each game just for an NFL game.
But the interesting part of it is that, at least initially, I mean, you put out some grades pretty much almost on the spot within a day, and then I'm sure that you do reevaluations and things of that nature for, you know, the overall ratings. But how do you kind of break it down of what you put out immediately and then what you put out during the course of the week?
Yeah, it's a good question. We do a first run off of broadcast, so we'll have we have a system where everybody can be working at the same time. So we have the people charting where they line up, people grading, people doing some of the other data collection all at the same time, simultaneous. We do get some initial grades up off of broadcast. We'll do our reviews are all based off of coaches film. So we'll get that all 22 review. And we actually have an entire separate process of former NFL coaches called the Pro Coaches Network. They will grade the players all separately off of the coaches film, and then we will compare our grades to their grades. We trained them up in our system, so they're kind of speaking our language using our scale, but they're bringing their hundreds of years of coaching experience to kind of be a check and a balance for what we're doing. So those first run grades get out there pretty quick. They don't change a ton by the time we get the reviews done, but they will change a little bit because we just have those extra eyeballs and a little bit better look at certain plays. So it definitely goes through different iterations, and the biggest thing for us is just trying to get it as right as possible, always trying to get a little bit better and get as close to the right answers as possible, knowing that football is a game of gray areas and there's always going to be some stuff that we can't have down perfect, but always aspiring to get there.
Like an example, kind of getting into specifics, Seahawks primarily a cover one, cover three type of team. When you look at the coverage of the cornerbacks and the safety, what eyeballs go and how do you try to look at those?
Yeah, I think the challenge with someone with a team like the Seahawks, right, you know, when they're playing cover one, cover three, kryptonite for that scheme is like the deep crossing route, right? So you get a deep crossing route and it's going to pass over three different linebackers and a strong safety, and you know, what the Seahawks do is a lot of times they just designate, hey, Bobby Wagner, you're covering the deep crosser on this particular play or whatever it might be. So a lot of times on plays like that, it's a challenge because, you know, those are the ones where you're not truly in the huddle to know, is this Bobby Wagner trying to, you know, run with the crosser? Is it J.J. Wright trying to run with the crosser? So those are the ones that sometimes go through multiple sets of eyes, and you get some of the more experienced analysts, you know, former NFL coaches, former NFL quarterbacks. We have former NFL linebackers, coaches, all on staff who have a pretty good feel for all the different schemes and what teams are running, and try to do as best you can to figure out what teams are trying to run. So that's the challenge with certain schemes. And, you know, Seattle, while it looks simple on the surface, hey, they play cover one, they play cover three, there's all these different checks within that system, that make them unique. And that's what makes them so good, because they are so good at matching up to what offenses throw at them.
Yeah, I would imagine that from the man-to-man standpoint in the cover one, cover three, I mean, you pretty much have Richard Sherman and the other cornerback on the other side. But again, trying to make the judgments in the middle of the field, whether it's going to be, is the safety getting beat? Is it the linebacker getting beat? Is the slot cornerback getting beat? How do you try to make judgments on those?
Yeah, so there are always some ones that are just, you know, too difficult to tell. Usually you could piece together what guys are trying to do. You say, hey, if Wagner's doing this, if Chancellor's doing this, this looks like it's KJ Wright's responsibility. He may have missed out here. Other times it truly is too difficult to tell. And in our world, we don't want to try to downgrade a guy just to do it. You know, we don't need to make a judgment if it is just too difficult to do. So a lot of times in our world, we'll just call it a zero, which is an average or an expected grade, and we'll kind of negate it, call it a busted coverage or something like that. So it's collected in the data somewhere, but maybe individual players themselves may not get docked. So certainly not trying to crush any players with negative grades that they don't deserve.
Which defensive scheme is the toughest to make grades on?
I'd say you've got teams like the Ravens. They do so many different things up front. I'd say the Patriots too. So the Patriots, everybody talks about Bill Belichick being so game plan oriented, and you can really see that on film because, you know, they'll play cover one, which, you know, it's man across the board with a free extra defender, but that free defender might have a completely different responsibility every single week. You know, one time they're doubling Antonio Gates, no matter what. Another time they're just dropping in the hole, looking to rob a deep crosser or a dig route. So those Patriots scheme, the Ravens scheme, they just do some unique things that aren't as clean versus a team like, say, the Cincinnati Bengals or the Miami Dolphins, who they play a lot of just pure cover two, where it's like, all right, I see this every week. They generally play it the same way every week, and you know what you're going to get from those teams.
I would imagine one of the tougher things to judge is the offensive line, because in many ways, you know, they try to betray analytics in the sense that, it's not the man-to-man blocking. Because, I mean, pretty much other than maybe the Jets, there's not a pure man-to-man blocking scheme. So what they have to do is, you know, combo blocks and everything else. How do you make the judgments on the offensive line of who gets beat and who doesn't?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things. Offensive line, and offensive linemen love to criticize PFF because, you know, there's a lot of nuance that goes in to offensive line play. And I certainly respect the nuance that goes into it. You know, there's so many adjustments that those guys have to make when they're zone blocking based off of the defensive front and shifts and the calls that they make. But I like to say, as soon as that ball snaps, you generally have an idea of what a guy's trying to do. So when you do have the center and the guard trying to double team up to the linebacker, it's simply putting an evaluation on how well do they get movement on the nose tackle, and then how well did the center climb up to go get that linebacker? Did he get in place? Did he not? Did he whiff on him? I'd say the bigger challenge with the offensive line isn't so much trying to figure out what linemen are trying to do, but trying to see when running backs make them look bad. And that happens quite a bit, where a running back, you know, is supposed to essentially read it out a certain way, and he either moves off his course on his own, or sometimes, you know, there's just a defender that makes a good play, forces him to cut. So a lot of times, you know, the lineman's blocking one way, and before you know it, the running back's running right into the guy that he's blocking. And it's not necessarily a bad block. It's just that the running back got moved off course, and it makes the lineman look bad. So we take pride in trying to really decipher what the lineman's trying to do, not dock him when the running back or something else happens to maybe make him look bad, maybe to the naked eye. and just trying again to say, okay, this is what you're trying to accomplish on that play and just how well did you do it? Just like coverage, certainly a lot of miscommunications and things that will say, hey, look, we're not going to dock you for this play that looked really bad. We're not going to guess on it. But for the most part, I think you have an idea of what guys are trying to do.
Do you have an adjustable rate mortgage that is about to increase? Or first and second mortgage that you would like to combine into one? Low mortgage payment? Hey, give Keel Mortgage a call today. They are local, friendly, and have been serving families up and down the West Coast for over 3 decades. With interest rates forecasted to rise, the best time to explore your options is now. It starts with a phone call to 1-888-778-KIEL or online at keelmortgage.com. That's Keel Mortgage, 888-778-KIEL. They can help. CL53969. One of the things I respected that came out probably maybe 4 or 5 years ago is the appreciation for inside pass rushers in nickel. And of course, I watched that because, you know, I follow all the salaries in that, and you can see the value of an inside pass rusher. I know, because again, you have run stoppers that play first and second down, but then a lot of times their value in free agency may only be $4 to $5 million a year, where if you can get an inside pass rusher, what do you give extra stuff to those guys? Because that seems to come out in the grades if you have that inside pass rush ability.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the defensive line is something I think we've done a pretty good job of saying, look, that disruption is extremely valuable. It's not just about sacks. You know, you can get sacks any number of ways that, to be honest, aren't all that impressive. But the ability to just beat the blocker in front of you and disrupt the quarterback is extremely valuable, especially up the middle. So I think we've done a good job of putting numbers to that and showing that a guy like Aaron Donald of the Rams is probably even more valuable than people realize, even when he does have an 8 or a 10 sack season. Or a Michael Bennett and just the disruption that he creates there. I think it's a position where we found just down to down, it's easier statistically to get pressure off the edge. Now, granted, you've got some better pure edge rushers out there, but those guys do create pressure at a higher rate. And the number of guys that can create pressure at an extremely high rate on the interior are few and far between. So they are extremely valuable when you have a guy like Michael Bennett, who in theory is an edge defender, and you say, look, we're going to put you up against guards, and we're going to let you beat guys that are a little bit bigger and slower than you. When you have an Aaron Donald, when you have a Calais Campbell or, you know, Jonathan Allen, who just came into the league as a rookie for the Washington Redskins, so valuable to get pressure on the interior. And when you find one of those guys, you certainly have to hold on to them.
So now when you put that all together and, you know, you have off-season free agency trades and all those different things, then you get the full evaluations. Can you put together what the system is for then determining a team in transition before you get into the season and then grading how good that team is going to be for talent?
Yeah, it's a challenge because sometimes, you know, I mentioned Calais Campbell a minute ago. He's going from an Arizona system to Jacksonville system, which on paper, if you're using, you know, the old school, well, they run a 3-4 in Arizona, they run a 4-3 in Jacksonville, that's a transition. But the reality of the situation is Calais Campbell, when he was in Arizona, played the 3 technique position over the shoulder of the guard. That was his most common position in Arizona. So while on paper it says, hey, he's moving from a 3-4 to a 4-3, he's actually probably going to be playing the same exact position when it comes to rushing from the interior. So I think when you know that a guy is going to be in a similar role, it's easier to project what he's going to do. I think the challenge is when, going back to New England again, they take guys and they put them in 12 different spots on the defense. So sometimes it's harder to project how certain players are going to fit into certain schemes. But for the most part, I think it's, trying to figure out what does the former team do pretty well? How is that guy used? How much of that same thing will he be doing at the new place? But for rookies and free agency, you know, there's always some question marks as to how they're going to fit in a new environment. So you can only use the information you have at hand, which is usually just comparing usage patterns and what you predict that they're going to be, how they're going to be used in the coming season.
Okay, so let's now get specific and kind of break down the Seahawks and where you think they are in relationship to the other teams in the National Football League. First, an overall view of the Seahawk team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be similar to past years. They're one of the better teams in the league. You know, they're powered by You have to start with quarterback Russell Wilson, the fact that he is, you know, a top 5 to 10 quarterback in the league year in, year out, can create plays down the field, can create plays with his legs when necessary. And I think the fact that they don't have a great offensive line is okay to a point, because Russell Wilson can kind of, you know, solve some of those issues. And then, of course, defensively, it's always started in the secondary. I think there are still some questions opposite Richard Sherman, but you have Richard Sherman, you have Cam Chancellor, you have Earl Thomas, and if those guys are all healthy, that's a great starting point. It's going to also come down to Michael Bennett maintaining his ability to get after the quarterback, Cliff Avril. Do they get great production out of Frank Clark and maybe, you know, one other guy to step up? But their formula has been rush the passer, play coverage on the back end, trust Russell Wilson, and help Russell Wilson, have Russell Wilson help that running game and help that offensive line a little bit. I think that general formula still very much in place in Seattle.
In fact, one specific guy that may be expected to be added to the team is Trumaine Brock, and I know that you've had him as pretty much one of the most talented cornerbacks still on the street. Kind of give an evaluation if what a Trumaine Brock could add to Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, that position opposite Richard Sherman, you know, is wide open. To be honest, I love Shaq Griffin, who's been getting a lot of play there. But I think when you look at Brock, he's been a productive player throughout his career. And, you know, we've seen guys come in and out of the Seattle system and, you know, not always maintain that. But I think Brock always grades positive for us from a coverage standpoint, played well in 2016 and in 2015. He's a pretty short tackler, so that's another helpful bit. Only missed 7 tackles last year with San Francisco. So I think he's absolutely worth a shot. He's a little bit smaller than what you normally see on the outside in Seattle, so he could be more of a slot option at times for them as well. They usually like those big 6-foot-plus long corners. But, yeah, Brock's been a productive player and potentially just another nice addition.
Yeah, now the defensive line seems to be the strength of this team. Kind of give a little overview of what you see from the Seahawks defensive line.
Yeah, when I look at, you know, we mentioned Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril, I think it starts with those guys. When they came in, that free agent class 2013, you know, they were our top 2 edge defenders on the free agent board that year. And I think teams miss in free agency all the time. These guys were not misses. They're a huge part of the team. I think Avril has had his ups and downs as far as just pure getting after the quarterback production at a high level. Despite all the sacks last year, didn't get after the quarterback at as high of a level as he did last year, but he's been pretty consistent. So I think it starts with those guys. Frank Clark has been excellent when given an opportunity, both against the run and rushing the passer. So I think that three-headed monster is huge. I think I want to see a guy like Jaron Reed maybe step up, and I really liked him coming out of Alabama, at least as a 2-down run stopper. He should be, you know, a little bit better than he was last year. And then I really like their 3rd-round pick, Nazaire Jones out of UNC. I think he has a ton of potential. I don't know how many snaps he'll see this year, but I like the influx of youth that they brought between Jones and, you know, hopefully Malik McDowell, you know, comes back and is healthy at some point. But it's a good combination of productive veterans and the youth, the Jaron Reeds and the rookies, that I think makes it a very solid unit.
Personal note, of course, I mean, I don't know, because you played baseball. In fact, you even pitched for the Tacoma Rainiers back in 2010. I mean, did you bring a little baseball analytics over, or did you just pick up with Pro Football Focus and then just start learning it and doing it?
Yeah, I was just more of a fan of PFF at the time. Yeah, I was probably in the Rainiers locker room reading PFF and looking up grades and stats, and I loved it. Football was always my passion, even while I was playing baseball. I think the thing that I took from baseball, you know, baseball built itself around, you know, trying to say, what are the things that are consistent in baseball? What can we quantify that's consistent? And then what fluctuates? You know, what is something that maybe we shouldn't focus on because we know that it fluctuates year to year. And the big thing in baseball is strikeouts, walks, and home runs. So it's funny, even when I was pitching in Tacoma that particular year, as much as you can as a player, I was like, man, if I could just strike out some more people, walk lesser, you know, less people, and don't give up as many home runs, you give yourself a chance. And, you know, I actually did a good job of that in Tacoma. I just gave up a ton of other hits. But those are those things that are consistent. When you're evaluating pitchers, if they're striking guys out, if they're not walking guys, generally they're going to have some success. I think what I took to football when I'm analyzing these guys is look at our data and say, okay, what stuff stays consistent? Usually as a quarterback, if you're good on third down, if you're good when you're not facing pressure, if you're good in these standard situations, you're going to be good year in, year out. The things that might fluctuate is maybe how well you play under pressure, how well you play it, you know, in just certain very specific situations. So I think that's what I've brought over is the idea of looking through PFF data and saying, what do we know is consistent year to year? What do we know fluctuates? And then you kind of make decisions based off of that.
And then finally, you have, you know, even though you got 30 teams investing in Pro Football Focus for the information, it's a lot of fan-friendly type of things. Talk about the things that's available for fans and how they can get them.
Yeah, we're really excited about what fans have access to. We've consolidated everything that we offer into just two basic packages called PFF Edge and PFF Elite. Edge is only $40, and Elite is a $200 product. But when you look at Edge at $40, we took a bunch of different products that we used to price at $10, $20, even $40, $50, and we just threw them into this one Edge product. So whether you're trying to master fantasy football, whether you're drafting, whether you're just trying to maintain your team during the season, it's perfect for you. If you're interested in our player grade, that's involved there too. If you're interested in the NFL draft, that's my baby. We have a 2018 preseason draft guide with over 300 player profiles. And if you, you know, if you sign up for Edge, you'll get our postseason draft guide. So it's everything you need to know about fantasy, NFL, the draft, and then Elite just kind of takes everything to the next level. It's all of our signature stats. If you want to find out quarterbacks, how well they play under pressure, how many, you know, wide receiver drop rate, cornerback stats, all of that stuff is in PFF Elite, and there's also some great DFS stuff there too. So really excited that we could able to consolidate those packages and just make things a little bit easier for fans. And I think there are a couple great products.
No, it's exciting stuff and very good. And Steve, I thank you so much for sharing the information. And again, just get it on Pro Football Focus. Just Google it. You can get it real fast. Steve Palazzo, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, John.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with the Professor.